All right, friends, welcome back. I have Deborah Wolf with me again. We were on the podcast a few weeks ago. We were talking about the stems and branches and the five and the six and spirals and all kinds of cool stuff like that. And we're back today because I want to know more about like actually using stems and branches in the clinic. I mean, cosmology is cool, but in my mind, like, how can we use that to help our patients? So I kind of want to have a little conversation about practical cosmology and like how we take some of this stuff that seems really, really heady and use it in our clinical work. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we got to stick some needles in people. So here we are. Deborah, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. It's very kind of you to invite me back again.
Well, we had so much fun the first time.
Yes, I did. Oh, practical cosmology. Well, a bit of a scary term. Where did you get that crazy idea from?
It just popped into my mind this morning. I was thinking about having this conversation with you, thinking about the last conversation we had, stems and branches, kind of heady stuff in a way. And yet there's got to be a way to take this stuff and root it in a way that helps us to do the work we do and helps us to inform the methods that we have.
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking about this the other day as well, is that for me, the more I do this, the more I realize that a lot of the things that I do relates to looking at which organs resonate properly with each other, resonate strongly with each other. And that if you work with that, you know, like recently I went to see Jason talking about Wang Juyi and all this, and, you know, it's all based on sort of channel theory. And I was shocked to discover that there are some schools in Britain that don't teach any channel division theory, which I found really weird.
Really?
But anyway,
how would you do acupuncture without that?
Well, I know, really shocking. I discovered that one school, which I'm not going to name, talks about only about five elements, and they refuse to have anything to do with divisions because that's to do with six, and they think that's going to confuse their students, which is sort of like giving somebody half a sandwich but not the rest.
Well, so in their defense, it does confuse the students. I mean,
of course.
I mean, we could look at five, you know, and you can kind of grok five, and then you want to like smash six onto it, and the mind kind of goes, wait a minute, how do I?
Well, yeah, but how do you pull the wool over people's eyes and tell them that it's all about five and then tell them there's 12 channels? It just doesn't make sense.
No, I guess it doesn't, does it?
Surely, you know, we can encompass five and six. That's the whole point.
Well, it is. And this is, to me, one of the super fascinating things is we have the five phase. You know, I was going to say perspective, but really it seems to me that our medicine, it's based on a number of things. Of course, the transformations of yin and yang, right? You get back to that. But there's also the way that things unfold via looking at it through the five. But at the same time, there are perspectives that you can get, especially if you're working with herbal medicine, that really comes through looking at the six confirmations, the six jing.
Absolutely. And the six confirmations.
And these are basics of
our
medicine.
They didn't come out of nowhere. They were there.
Right. They were there. And our medicine relies on these things.
Absolutely.
These are like foundational elements.
Yeah.
It's like any method. I suspect, I could be wrong, I'm going to throw this out as a hypothesis. Any method of acupuncture should be able to be explained through transformations in yin and yang, transformations of the five phases, and the different changes that we see through the six jing as well. We should be able to look at any method, and those principles should show up in some way.
And the three jiaos.
Oh, the three jiaos, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, going back to the whole idea about looking at pairs.
Mm-hmm.
So we have those pairs that we call, well, we call them divisions, or you can call them confirmations, or, you know, that kind of stuff.
So we're talking about the six jing here, the tai yang, xiao yang, yang ming, dung, dung, dung.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So looking at those, I mean, because it seems to me that things that resonate with each other, things that symbiotically work together, are going to give you a much stronger treatment. So, you know, so long as we can find connections between different channels, then we can be much more pointy in our way of treating. And if you're more pointy, then you don't need to use so many points. Sorry about the pun. which, you know, my understanding of that's what Jason was talking about. He was sort of giving this as some kind of revelation that you only need to use these 2 points because they're in the same division and that's going to do the job. And people are going, wow, that's so interesting. I never thought about doing that. And, you know, for me, that's not unusual because I was trained in a school where, you know, we were always using very few points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. And we're taught to think of the great divisions like, and I know it's a very popular combination that Jason talks about. Wang Jui talked about it a lot. I had a little chance to study with him too when I was in China, thanks to Jason. But he would talk about like spleen 9 and lung 5.
Yeah.
Right. There's these 2 points, basically same area. They're both on the Tai Yin channel. If you really want to connect with the Tai Yin energy and do something with it, these can be really helpful.
Yeah. But we also have other points that have got combinations. And some of those show you stem combinations. For instance, what we know of as the 4 gates.
Stem combinations. Tell me more about that.
Or great movement combinations. Well, what are the? Do you know what the 4 gates are? Do we have the same terms? I'm just checking.
Oh, okay. That's great. When I think 4 gates, I'm thinking of the tiger's mouth, large intestine 4, and the great rushing liver 3.
Yeah, that's right. And you know they're in the same location, aren't they? Hand and foot.
Yeah, they're in the same location.
Yeah.
You know, well, one of them is wood. The other one is metal. Metal and wood.
Yes. And one is yi stem, which is yin metal. And the other one is gung stem, which is, so one is yin wood, that's yi. And the other one, gung, is yang metal. So it's the combination of these 2 stems that have, you know, one is wood, one is metal, one is yin, one is yang. And they're sort of connected in a way because they have this same dayun, great movement.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just looking at, this is great. I'm looking at this first as the co-cycle of the 5 phases, right? You got metal and wood. That would lead me to think about that. We have yang metal. Okay, yang is active. This is not quiescent. We're taking active metal,
yeah,
and we're sticking it into yin wood.
Correct.
That, I think, would create a bit of a dynamic flow.
Exactly. And actually, they're linked. They've got a particular relationship. In fact, these, you know, you can call them maybe opposite stems, which have this same Dai Yun great movement. They're always linked across the curse cycle, and they always go yin to yang and yang to yin. So you can also have, actually our body is made that way. I mean, you know, we've noticed that liver 3 and colon 4 are in a similar location on the body. Yeah, one's on the hand, one's on the foot. Mm-hmm. What about, for instance, spleen 9 or just the spleen and the gallbladder? They have very similar opposite sort of functions and names. You know, you've got yin mound spring and yang mound spring. You've got spleen 6, which is the 3-leg yin all together. And you've got gallbladder 39, 3-leg yang all together. Do you see what I mean? Yeah.
Yes, I do. Yep.
And then as you come
in
up the leg,
locations.
you've got the spleen on the inside. You've got the gallbladder on the outside. Do you know what I mean? They're yes. doing, yeah. Those are also linked in a similar sort of way. The spleen is yin earth and the gallbladder is yang wood.
Ah, here we are with the cusp cycle again. Mm. But we're going the other way, aren't we? We're going from earth
into wood
here.
And another thing about this is there's a, I can't remember where it is, but there's a chapter in the Huang Di Nei Jing that it isn't even the whole chapter. It just mentions it. And it's, and maybe it's in the Nanjing. It says something about, you know, why do the Jing well points in the yin channel start with wood, but the ones in the yang channel start with metal? Have you come across that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's I think in my first year of acupuncture school, I remember them teaching us that. And yeah, it was kind of a head scratcher. It's like, what, wait, what? Well, one's yin, one's yang. But I never really understood anything deeper than that, other than
when it explains it, it uses the stems as an example in that they have this matching relationship, wood to metal. And then as you go through all the different antique points, then they match across fire and water.
So all of this, all these antique point relationships.
Across, yeah.
Across in this way. Mm-hmm. Is mapped out with the stems and branches.
It's mapped out with the stems.
It's mapped out with the stems.
The relationship between the stems. Because it's like, you know, when we look at an element, we see that usually apart from fire, we see two organs that share the same element. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, with the stems, and it's like you can think about the element as being like a gathering relationship. It's got a yin side and it's got a yang side. Do you see what I mean? Yeah?
Yes, of course.
Like two cherries on the same, you know, bit of stalk.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And with the stems, they're also linked by a higher sort of relationship, and that's called the Dayun, the great movement.
Mm-hmm. Are there some other point combinations that you find that you use in your work that show up in your practice on a somewhat regular basis? That,
I mean, I use a lot. This kind of matching between stem things, I've noticed that it exists a lot in sort of everyday practice that people don't realize that they're using it, but it does exist. And I think that our body is really made like that. Like, for instance, the lung and the small intestine, they're also linked, and they're like the front of the shoulder and the back of the shoulder, for instance. Mm-hmm. Or the inside of the arm and the outside of the arm. Do you see what I mean? Those kind of things. So, you know, there's lots of these. So, like, our body seems to be physically formed like that. And then I've noticed that there's point names that are very similar across as well. And I use it very much to balance this great movement idea, because the great movement is seen as being a much more heavenly aspect. So, for instance, if I want to do something much stronger, then I might use both sides of this relationship.
Because it brings into play the energy of this great movement.
Yeah, that's right. It has a much, it's a little bit like moving the strings of a puppet. So you're kind of working higher up. You don't have to do so much. And it has a much stronger balancing effect.
Fewer needles, more effect.
Absolutely. So it follows this idea of having things that are synchronized together, but working at a heavenly level, because it's to do with stems, and stems are heavenly stems. They're not anything else.
And in working with these heavenly stems, does that tend to have a greater effect on the earthly branches?
Not on the earthly branches. The earthly branches, they have a different linking system. The earthly branches, they link with respect, because the stems are to do with heaven and space, and there are things happening up here sort of outside our climatic environment, if you want. They're to do with planets. They're a bit beyond our stratosphere, if you want. Okay. But branches, they're to do with seasonal relationships. So when you talk about branches, then immediately you're talking about things to do with divisions or confirmations, seasons and time.
So this is more the six confirmations, the O Jing.
Yeah. And the thing about branches, or, you know, this kind of like linking branches, is that you can do it in a variety of different ways. There's not only one way. So the Liu Jing is just one of them.
Mm-hmm. So different aspects of acupuncture can be viewed through this particular lens of stems and branches.
Absolutely.
And helps to inform us in that way. I want to see if we can map something onto this. You know, I've been working with this Sa'am system. And we're very used to, in Chinese medicine, working with counterbalanced organs of some sort, right? So like if we think about wood, we think about liver and gallbladder, you know, or you think about metal, we're thinking about lung and large intestine. And we know something about those relationships. And we use those on a regular basis in our thinking and in our treatment. And then, we're also familiar, like you were talking about earlier, with like the great divisions. So you might decide that you're working with like the tie-in, right? And you're choosing points on the tie-in because there's the hand tie-in and foot tie-in, and they have a kind of a relationship. And we understand that we can work with these things because they're kind of counterbalanced in a way. They have a resonance with each other. You were talking about resonance a little earlier in the conversation, and that organs have to resonate properly. And I think that makes sense to all of us if you study Chinese medicine for even a few months, right? Because this is fundamental. Now, I've been working with this Sa'am system. It has a different set of counterbalances. It pairs the organs and channels and phases a little bit differently. So, for example, the spleen is paired with the large intestine, and the kidney is paired with the small intestine, and the heart is paired with the urinary bladder. The gallbladder and the pericardium go together, and then you got the liver and the triple burner. And these are counterbalanced. In fact, I think it's Su Wen 69, I can't remember. There's a great article I read from The Lantern that really talked about this. It was a translation from Liu Zhuzhou's work, the great Shanghan master of the last century. And I found in my clinical work that these counterbalanced pairs are super powerful. They're super powerful. And one of my thoughts is, I mean, I'm trying to figure this out, right? It's like intellectually a big puzzle. I've got some of my own ideas about it, but I'm curious from what I've just said in the counterbalances that we just talked about, running this through your filters of stems and branches, does anything pop out for you about these relationships?
Well, it makes total sense. I mean, did they tell you why you pair those together?
Because that's the way it is. Toby, who taught it to me, learned it from a wandering monk.
Yeah, I remember.
And it's just like, this is how it works.
Yeah. But I mean, okay, so what about the Chinese clock? Or I don't know what you call it.
The Zhuo clock. Okay. So I've looked at this as well. So you can find this on the Zhuo clock. And what you're doing is you're like skipping meridians. So for example, if you pull up a Zhuo clock and look at it, you would see, well, let's just start with 3 in the morning, right? The lung. Mm-hmm. Next comes the stomach. Next is...
Next comes the colon. And then
next, that's right. Next comes the colon, then the stomach.
And then the spleen.
So in the Sa'am pairings, the lung... Skip the colon, go to the stomach. Those are connected. And likewise, the colon...
With the spleen.
With the spleen.
Yeah, because if you look at that clock... there's a running joke in my college that I'm unable to ever teach a lecture without drawing the Chinese clock and talking about it. So you're on difficult territory here.
Okay, all right. I'm drawing a Chinese clock right now. All y'all's out there, you have the clock memorized, right? It's in your mind.
Draw
okay,
it
good.
Now. Right. So there's a lot. I mean, there's so much to say about the Chinese clock. I think it's one of the most fascinating things ever. So if you look at the Chinese clock, basically one of the things that you can do is you can divide the Chinese clock into three parts.
Yes.
And if you're looking at the way that the energy is flowing in the body along the channels, then each section would be one big loop that includes the arm, the leg, the chest, and the head. Yeah. So you can start at the lung, and then you can go all the way along the lung meridian from lung 1 or from the inside until lung 11. And then you start, and then that goes to colon 1, and then it goes to colon 20, meets stomach 1, goes all the way down to stomach 45, meets spleen 1, comes all the way up, and basically joins with lung 1 or mm-hmm. with the lung meridian. Do you see the beginning of the lungs on the inside? Yeah, so that's yes. one big loop. Mm-hmm. So you could also think about, I mean, in a general way, that think about the whole Chinese clock as having these three big loops, and one's to do with heaven, one's to do with earth, and one's to do with man. The heavenly one is to do with, let's say that the earthly one is to do with the way that we maintain ourselves. So the lung, colon, stomach, spleen bit, that's to do with our assimilation, digestion, maintenance sort of stuff. Yeah. And the heavenly one is the heart, small intestine, bladder and kidney, because it's to do with heavenly fire and the Shen and, you know, Jing and, you know, all our creation. Remember last time we talked about the creative axis and the created axis?
Yes.
So that would be very creative. And then the last bit, which is the pericardium, three heater, sanjiao, gallbladder and liver. That's more like the man part, because it's the bit that's to do with our ability to actually be in this world. Remember also last time we talked about the fact that the pericardium and the three heater, you know, you don't have those in the stems, you only have them in the branches, and they're to do with sort of like, you know, earthly fire rather than heavenly fire.
Right, the difference between imperial and ministerial.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've got these three big loops.
We got the three big loops, and we're back to that three that you were talking about earlier
today. Yeah, it's always back to three. So when you've got these three big loops, if you look at one of those loops, then there's a yin division that is paired with a yang division.
Mm-hmm. And the yin wraps the yang.
Yeah, that's right. And the yin is related to one quality, like dampness, for instance, for Tai Yin. Mm-hmm. And the yang one is balancing with the other quality, like dryness, for Yang Ming.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so they're sort of biao li paired in terms of their qualities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So within those two loop, within that loop and those two divisions, what you're doing is you're joining a yin with a yang from one division to the other. That's why you've got the lung that is going with the stomach and the spleen that is going with the colon within that loop.
Yes. Well, but we could also say that they're joined via division if you were doing lung and large intestine, because you've got one yin, one yang.
But that's in the same element.
Ah, because we're going across elements.
Exactly.
Because we're going across elements. And so that brings another kind of dynamism to it. You know,
so what you're actually doing is you're joining through divisions and joining through elements. Cross division, cross element, as it were.
Cross division and cross element.
So you're joining across five and across six. So that's why it's such a brilliant combination, I reckon.
Joining across five and six. Okay, so I hear you say that and I get goosebumps. No, I'm serious. And the reason I get goosebumps is because as I've been working with the Sa'am acupuncture, I feel like my perception has shifted. And I can see more into five, and I can see more into six.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit weird. It's not like a theory in my head anymore. Sometimes I see it.
Yeah.
And so you talking about how this joins five and six, it's just innate. I just go, yep, yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you just did lung and colon, I mean, that's like, okay, big deal. We're just in the world of five.
We're in the world
of
five.
But what you're doing is you're going across. So you're managing to sort of join them both, which is what bodies are about. They're about the joining in five of six. It makes total sense.
Five and six need each other.
Absolutely.
What happens if you have five but no six?
Well, I don't really know, Michael, but I'm thinking just in terms of my practical clinical experience, it seems like if you can join across things more, then you can act more powerfully. Mm-hmm. So if you restrict yourself to one thing, then you're not as effective.
Right. Again, I'm thinking lung, large intestine. If you're just working in metal.
Yeah.
Well, how do you get any dynamic flow going?
Exactly.
You're just in metal. Oh, exactly. We're going to hook the metal up with the earth. Oh, there's a mother-son relationship here.
Yeah.
For one.
And there's the Tai Yin relationship.
And there's the Tai Yin Yang Ming, which is that other dynamic balance of dry and wet.
And you're using top and bottom. And I don't know what you do, but I use left and right as well. So, you know, I don't usually do bilateral points. I usually use unilateral across the body points, because that way I'm encouraging that spiral that is the way that life moves.
Ah, working on one side. This is another big thing about the Sama acupuncture, is it's a one-sided treatment.
Do they always do everything on one side, or do they do, because I do, like, for instance, the left hand and the right foot.
They do it all on one side.
Yeah, I think that's really sad.
Oh, you might want to give it a try. It creates a super powerful dynamic in the body.
I can totally see that, and it completely makes sense. I'd be up for doing that. I'm basically into anything that involves causing more action across the body.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense to me. So, you know, maybe you could experiment with doing the points that you're doing, but the doing them on opposite sides of the body rather than doing it on all one side. What's the logic with doing them on one side? Is it to do with agenda?
Some of it is gender. There is that piece, but if there's something overriding, let's say a certain kind of pain on a particular side of the body, then you would want to treat the side opposite the pain.
Yeah.
And go that way. But otherwise you would be doing it more with gender. And
which side is which?
If you can, you want to treat women on the right and men on the left.
Mm. And do you know why that is?
No. No, actually I do.
I bet you do.
Because men are more chi. And so we treat the left side to influence the chi on the right. Women are more blood. So we treat the right side to influence the left.
How do we decide which side relates to chi and which side relates to blood? How do you decide?
That is one of those things that I've taken my teacher's word for it.
Why?
because I don't know as much about stems and branches as you. So now you can clue me in.
Okay, so this is my understanding. You know that the emperor always faces south.
Yes.
So we're like the emperor. We're not really, but, you know, this is the idea.
In our own life, we are.
Yes. So humans reflect what they get. Yeah. So if you're facing south, you've got yang, full yang in front of you. Yeah. And on your left side in the east, the sun is rising. And on your right side in the west, the sun is setting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So mostly because we've got this full sun, full yang in front of us, our front is yin. We're reflecting what we see, what we get, mostly, apart from the stomach channel, which is a bit of an oddity.
Yes.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got, you know, cold, winter, moon, whatever, behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got all the tai yang, all that yang stuff on our backs.
Reflecting that. Uh-huh. Okay.
You see what I mean? So front and back, we're reflecting what's on outside us. Now on the left,
I just want to comment here. This is where it gets a little bit weird, because on one hand, you know, I'm imagining being in my body, I'm orienting to the world. At the same time, the world is orienting to me in a reflective way.
We're reflecting the world, not the world reflecting us.
Okay,
macrocosm is bigger than microcosm.
Thank you. We are reflecting the world. And for me, in my mind, it gets a little woogity pretty quickly when I think about my perceptive apparatus as somehow being involved in the reflection of the outer world. I mean, it gets a little confusing.
Mm. Chinese medicine is very confusing on all levels, at all times. That's the fun of it. You never really know what you're doing.
Well...
That's the challenge.
A lot of times we don't know what we're doing, and yet I feel like we've got some pretty solid stuff to navigate with and kind of chart a course.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we got handholds.
Yeah.
We're not just flapping in the wind here.
No. So you know, another way of looking at it. I mean, I don't know if you do this or whatever, but one of the ways that we teach this is by looking at duograms. Do you know about duograms?
I do not, but I think I'm about to.
Okay. I'm just writing it down so that I can show you as well as talk about it.
Okay.
I don't know if you can, can you see it?
Oh, yes. And I'll put that on the show notes page.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh,
so duograms
yeah.
are the basis of trigrams and then hexagrams and all that kind of stuff. And
so we've got, so for the listeners, I just want to say this real quick. We have south, two solid lines, north, two broken lines, west, a solid on top, broken on the bottom, east, broken on top, solid on bottom.
Yeah, and duograms and trigrams and hexagrams, we read them from the bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
So the east is like rising yang, and the west is like rising yin.
Yes.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah, all good?
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that in the south, and the unbroken line is yang, and the broken line is yin, okay? Mm-hmm. Just so we know that we're all talking the same story, yeah? So in front of me, in the south, I've got all that yang, and then my body is compensating for it, if you want, by being as yin as possible. And we could call it the south, we can call it the sun, we can call it summer, we can call it midday. Do you know what I mean? It's the moment of full yang.
Yes. And we orient with as much yin as we can muster. That would be
our because
front.
I mean, you know, I was talking to my son Ruben today, you know, yesterday, and he's born in the middle of summer. It was a really, really hot summer. And he was saying, I love the night and the winter so much. It's so fantastic. And I'm like, God, I can't stand it. I just want to emigrate as quickly as possible. I hate winter. I want the sun. I need light. I need more light. I need more heat, you know, and I'm born in December. So I said, oh, you know, maybe it's because we're compensating. You know, you're born in summer and you're already running so hot that you really, really love winter. Cold, dark, yin. Do you know what I mean? But I'm born in the deepest, darkest part of winter.
Yes.
I love hot countries. I want more sun. Do you know what I mean? So it's a natural thing to have this kind of compensatory relationship, if you want.
Yes. Yes. Makes total sense. Yes.
Is that okay?
Yep. I'm with you.
So once we've got, so now we've got front and back, but we're 3D people.
Mm-hmm.
We're not in 2D. So we haven't only got front and back. We've also got
So left. You're saying in a 2D universe, that would be it and you wouldn't need to do anything else?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. All right. But we're in 3D. so bring on the trigrams.
And we don't even need to go as far as trigrams. We can stick with the duograms.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, just for this, I think we can stick with the duograms. Let's not get too complicated, especially on the radio. That's
hang
really
on. I'm going to buckle up anyway. I want to fall out of my chair.
I dread to think what you do when you're driving.
I'm not thinking about this stuff.
Okay.
It takes
I am
brain
quite
power.
Often. But then I'm a crazy Italian driver, so you know you probably don't want to get in the car.
So
with
you
me.
Can you can like drive an automobile and think about the stems and branches at the same time. That's extraordinary.
I do frequently. I drive about an hour to go and teach at my college, which is in East Grinstead. It's called the International College of Oriental Medicine. It's the oldest acupuncture college in the UK.
Mm.
So I get to think a lot, and I like to think before I start a class because then I'm teaching all day, and it's you know I've got to be focused.
Okay.
Anyway, never mind.
Back to duograms.
Yeah. So here we are. We've got the sun in front, south. We've got the north behind. We've got the east on the left. We've got the west on the right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But remember that I said that the east, we read it from the bottom up. It's like rising yang. It's got a yang line underneath and a yin line on top. Yeah. So it's like it's to do with springtime. Yang is coming up from under the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't reached full yang, which is summer.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
It's super, I mean, I look at this, it's super easy to see.
Yeah. Great.
Right?
Good. That's why I'm waving this piece of paper in front of your face.
Yeah. Well, I just wrote it down on a piece of paper as well so I could look at
I'll
it.
Okay, I'll stop waving it then.
You can stop waving it. All y'all's listening to this, you can go and on the show notes, we'll have a picture here.
Sorry, Michael. On my left-hand side, I've got the east, okay, which is like sunrise, springtime, dawn,
yeah? Yep.
That's yang coming up, yeah?
Yeah?
And on the west, I've got autumn, sunset, you know, all those kind of things. That's yang going down or yin coming up.
Right, because, I mean, you could say it either way and they're both correct.
Correct.
It just depends on where you're orienting.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we're going in a sort of clockwise fashion, you know, sort of round, yeah. So because we, you know, if you're looking at the seasons, you could map the seasons on this, you could map the directions on this, you can map the time of day on this and so on and so forth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Remember that it's, you know, all that kind of stuff. So because I've got rising yang on my left, then my body needs to compensate with something yin. Well, what's it going to do? It can't compensate with full on yin, like yin yang front and back. It's got to compensate with the next level down of yin yang, which is blood and qi in our bodies.
More
so
forms.
On the left hand side, it has to compensate with blood. And on the right hand side, it has to compensate with qi. Because blood and qi represent yin yang, but, you know, kind of like the next level down. Instead of looking at the creative axis of north, south, fire, water, you know, summer, winter, we're looking at the created axis of east, west, if you see what I mean. So that's like the next level down. It's yin yang in the body, which is called blood and qi.
Yes.
So that's why the left hand pulse has got to do with blood more, and the right hand pulse has got more to do with qi. That's why on the left hand side, we've got the heart and the liver, you know, all those kind of bloody things.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, you've got the lung, the spleen. Hey, they've got to do more with qi.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the spleen also helps to make blood and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, fundamentally, you can say that.
Yes, I see how those resonances work. They're there because they're counterbalancing these outer influences.
Yeah.
And you said something else that really caught my attention, that on the horizontal, we have the created.
Yeah.
And on the vertical, we have the creative.
Yeah. Keeps coming back to the same thing, you know. It's like, what do you call them? They're like fundamental laws that if you work those out first, then the rest of it kind of fits in. You keep coming back to them and it kind of helps to put things in place.
It really does.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's fun, isn't it?
It is fun. I mean, I wonder if I could have even begun to understood that kind of thing as a student. I mean, I feel like it's after having been out and practiced a bit that it starts to make sense. But then again, I find for me, learning is just an iterative process and
Absolutely.
It just takes a long time to bang stuff into my thick skull.
Yeah, but I think that's, you know, I mean, that's the way I teach stems and branches as well. It's like a, you know, you go round it and you do a first thing. We do this with elements as well. And then you go round again and then you sort of more bits click into place. I think everybody's like that. I think that's normal.
Okay.
You know, but I mean, for me, you see, I trained as a mathematician and mathematicians really don't like swallowing. Why is it like this? Because I say so. So, you know, we always want to find out how to work it out. So for me, I think, you know, as a student, this was essentially useful information.
Yes.
Because I could really kind of look at the underlying structure and then work the rest of it out rather than just swallowing it whole, which just annoyed me.
Well, my suspicion is it's mathematicians, but it's also people that, you know, like are natural scientists or have kind of a scientific bend in the mind, which, you know, something can be presented to you and you go, okay, what's the underlying mechanism? What's happening underneath that?
Yeah.
Show me why or show me how. Actually, asking to being shown why and being asked to, or asking to show how will probably get you different kinds of answers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Chinese cosmology is all about actually natural science, isn't it?
Well, on occasion, just for fun, because I get tired of like being in some social situation. People say, what do you do? You know, I'm an acupuncturist and, you know, whatever. I mean, it's a boring conversation. On occasion, just for fun, I like to tell people, oh, you know, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a natural scientist.
Yeah, exactly. There's a massive debate about it, or there was for a really long time. You know, that's one of the fundamental Joseph Needham question, wasn't it? Was, you know, why is it that the Chinese science didn't do what they did in the West? And was it because, you know, they did weird things or whatever? You know, all those, this is one of those areas, historical areas of academic interest. you know. And basically Chinese cosmology is describing science. It's just describing natural science following these rules, these tenets, these underlying facts. And, you know, it's really difficult to learn something or understand something if nobody tells you what the rules are.
Yeah, so this is like the underlying bones of what we do.
Absolutely.
But we don't necessarily study that particular level of anatomy.
No. It's a bit sad, really.
Well, we're doing it right now.
Yeah. So back to the Chinese clock.
Back to the Chinese clock.
So that we had just a little meander into lefts and rights and blood and chi and men and women and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, super helpful. And how our bodies are actually reflecting the outside environment. The way we're built is a reflection of those outside influences.
Yeah, and you know, I was saying before that the way that our physical body is built also reflects these relationships between stems. You know, physically, liver, colon, small intestine, lung, you know, these other pairings, they're sort of built into our bodies, which is quite amazing to me anyway.
Well, Chinese medicine is endlessly amazing. I mean, there certainly is that. And to be able to, I mean, what we're talking about right now and the kind of conversation and the things we're talking about, this is not going to help me necessarily select a point in clinic this afternoon. However, I mean, it might, but I feel like what it's doing is it's helping me understand like the underlying blueprint of how a lot of fundamentals work that I just take for granted that they work, but I don't understand the mechanism of how and why they do what they do.
I think that if you can see relationships between things, then when somebody comes with some kind of disease or sign or symptom or whatever, you can kind of see the ways they link together much better.
Uh-huh. So if you have this kind of interconnected way of thinking between the five and the six in the dual clock, which is kind of comes back to three.
Or six.
I mean, it's both, depending on what you're looking at. Then as people come in, it's just like our perceptive ability has a wider frame. Is that a way to say it?
Yeah, it means that you can kind of see connections in a way that you don't need to have an encyclopedic knowledge of syndromes, if you want. You can see, it's back to that mathematical thing about doing things from first principles. You know, mathematicians hate to have somebody say, this is the formula now, work it out. You know, it's more like, how does this work? Can I work it out from first principles? If I can understand how it works, then I can apply it in all the areas I want to. And then I'm going to see relationships much better. I'm going to be able to sort of notice things that I wouldn't normally notice.
Exactly. Yes.
And bodies are like that. They do weird things, you know. If they always did the same thing, then we wouldn't have so many books about Chinese medicine.
Well, we wouldn't have a job either.
Yeah, because it'd just be a mechanical thing. I mean, if you look at, you know, texts written by famous Chinese doctors, a lot of it is them saying things like, well, you know, I would have thought that it was like this. I've been taught that it was like this. But actually, when I noticed, then I noticed that there was this connection and it worked this way. And that wasn't the way I expected it. But actually, it seemed to work. Do you see what I mean?
Yes. Yes. I've read plenty of case studies like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how can you apply those if you don't understand why? You can't, because you just think, oh, yeah, I'm going to put it in my mind that this guy one day did that. I might maybe find one patient where that happened, perhaps, and I might be able to apply it.
Yeah, no, first of all, that stuff is hard to remember.
Yeah.
And I get it that, you know, for exams and even to just begin to train our mind in a way to see the world differently. Seeing things through these kinds of patterns can be useful, as, you know, as a mental exercise.
Of course.
As a beginning of seeing things differently. But what I hear you talking about is that again, we're looking at some first principle material, that if you get that, the other stuff that maybe it's like how they get from A to B, you'll be able to see how they got from A to B. Mm. Actually, it's not getting from A to B. How they get from A to D, how they get from A to F, that's really hard to see. But if you can go back to some of these principles, you can see how it goes from A to F, because you can see the B, C, D, everything in between.
Or if you don't see it, then you can make an informed guess.
Yes, we do that a lot in clinic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because again, you know, nobody does exactly what they're supposed to, do they? Ever. But that's the joy of it. That's what's so fascinating, isn't it? You know, you've got a hunch. Mm-hmm. You try and sort out your hypothesis, and then you kind of check it out. Is this going to work? Is this not going to work? Do you know what I mean? I mean, I'm very straightforward with my patients nowadays. I say things like, I think that this is going on, but I'm not really sure. So let's do it this way and we'll see what happens. And then you tell me what happens, and then I'll be able to kind of adjust what I'm doing a bit.
Yeah. I've stopped using the word diagnosis in my clinic. And I what I tell people is, same thing. It's like, I have a hypothesis. I have this idea. Mm. I suspect this is what's happening. Mm. So we're just going to use a little bit of science here. Here's a hypothesis. We're going to do something and see what happens. Mm. People like that. People like knowing that I'm thinking in scientific terms.
I don't even make it sound so very scientific.
I do. I mean, I'm trying to make it. I mean, in
Good
some
idea.
Ways. Well, I, just because people believe in science. And so if I can speak a language that says, I believe in science, in fact, the principles of science are reliable and necessary. I mean, they're coming to an acupuncturist. You know, people don't know what to think about an acupuncturist. Is it voodoo? Is it some weird thing? Is it magic? You know, am I going to go to hell because I'm a, you know, born again Christian? I'm getting I mean, I've had people that have come to me and said, well, you know, even though I'm a staunch whatever, I'm here because I want to see if it'll help. So sometimes people have a lot of misconceptions about acupuncture. And so if I can kind of ground it in something that they're comfortable and familiar with, they can relax into it.
I know what you mean. I mean, I've had people ask me if they have to believe in it for it to work.
Yeah. What do you tell them?
No. And then I tell them how, you know, how I totally didn't believe in it when I first started. In fact, I was incredibly skeptical. So, you know, fair enough. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. My first acupuncture session, absolutely no idea. In fact, I thought it was a load of rubbish, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So fair enough. I mean, yeah, I can kind of see about being a scientist, but maybe we have to go back to that word about practical cosmology. Maybe we've got to say that we are, you know, I'm a Chinese scientist. I'm not a UK scientist. I'm not a European scientist. Because it's all about turning your thinking upside down, isn't it, really?
Well, yes, there is that turning our thinking upside down. But I would still hold a stance here that whether we're doing, air quotes here, Western science or Chinese science, the practice of science is the practice of science. We've got different ways that we can look at it. We have different perceptual frameworks we can come at it from. But science is science. It's about observing, coming up with some ideas of what's going on, testing it out. Mm. Wash,
Fair
rinse,
enough.
Repeat.
So do you think we should wear little badges? I'm a practical cosmologist.
Wait, say that again?
Do you think we should wear a little badge? I'm a practical cosmologist.
Practical cosmologist. I was at the bank the other day making a deposit, and they don't call people bank tellers anymore. Doesn't
no?
say tell no no this the guy helping me was a universal banker.
You're joking.
No, I'm not. I'm dead serious. His title is universal banker, and I'm thinking, that's cool, man. I wish I could be a universal banker. Doesn't that sound fantastic?
Well, that sounds much nicer. We've got real problems with parking in Brighton, and you pay lots of money to park, and there are these nasty, mean people that go around giving you fines if you're parking in the wrong place, you know, any minute here, there, and everywhere. And they're called parking attendants.
I thought parking attendant is someone who parked your car for you.
Yeah, you'd think they were trying to help you.
Yeah.
They are not trying to help you.
Yeah, it's that new speak. So, yeah, practical cosmologists. I really do feel like we get to play in this realm that's kind of unseen, but you can kind of see it. But it's like you can't look at it directly. It's like you look at it out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah, it's at the tip of your fingers or just behind something and just on the side of something. I just think that's so amazing.
Yeah, and you're a mathematician. How does that work? So you're talking about something that is like a deep, intuitive, you know, sensate, felt thing. At the same time, you've got this super mathematical brain. How does all that work together?
Well, it works brilliantly, actually. I mean, I think because I'd always been a craftsperson, but also a mathematician, and so it's actually been a completion thing for me. And acupuncture has been a way of putting things together, so I can use my practical skills, but I can also use my brain, mm-hmm. and it all comes together really nicely.
Mm-hmm. It's funny to hear you say that. When I was in junior high school, I had a shop class. Like where you learn to make stuff, like build bookshelves and, you know, it's boys have to take a shop class, right? Learn how to, you're a man, learn, or you're going to be a man, learn how to use tools.
I don't say boys. Oh, my dad fought for me to be in the woodworking class. I was the only girl ever to do it. He waived the Equal Opportunities Act at the headmaster.
Oh my goodness. Well, I loved shop class. I loved it. I loved it to pieces because I loved making things. I'd like doing things with my hands. And when I came home, and told my nice Jewish parents that I love shop class and I want to do more of that. It didn't go well.
No. I totally get it. Both my parents are academics. When I told them that I left university and I wanted to live from crafts, that didn't go so well either.
Right. Yeah. You know, but here we are. We do love what can be created in this world with the hands. And connecting with the heart and the mind. It's super creative. Exactly. I was just about to say that.
That's what's so great.
It scratches both of those itches.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's very fulfilling.
It is. All right. Well, I want to circle back here for a moment to my Sa'am correspondences.
Okay.
And, you know, we've talked about how they're kind of Biali and that they go across the confirmations. They go across elements and they go across confirmations, which gives them a lot of dynamic activity. Are there any other ways of thinking about and looking at these? I mean, I know if you look at the trigrams, for example, if you look at the trigram for mountain, which is associated with Yang Ming, mountain is dry, top of the mountain. If you look at the trigram for Tai Yin, it's marsh. And, you know, there's that counterbalance with the trigrams. I mean, you see it very clearly in the trigrams, these particular relationships. They're inverse images of each other.
So when you get into the world of trigrams, there's a couple of things that I'd need to think about first. One would be, which sequence of trigrams are you looking at? Are you looking at the pre-heaven or the post-heaven? Fuxi, Wen Wang?
I don't know.
So that's one thing.
Okay.
There's two different sequences.
Wait a minute. There's two different sequences of trigrams. Okay.
Yeah, one of them is like everything is opposite each other. So if you've got three yang lines, then opposite you've got three yin lines. That's the pre-heaven sequence.
Maybe this is the pre-heaven sequence. I just know that when I've looked at it, you've got the marsh balancing the mountain. You've got the tie-in balanced by the yang ming. You've got the, I don't have it in front of me and I can't pull it up in my memory, but if you look at each.
There's fire and water,
exactly.
There's heaven and earth.
Yes.
There's wind and thunder,
yes.
Lake and mountain and so on and so forth. And
right.
there's definitely a balancing situation.
Yes. Now you're saying these are the pre-heavens?
If they're balanced in that way, mm-hmm. Yes. The post-heaven has got a lot more to do with seasons. So they're not balanced. It's got much more movement. And it's actually to do with like the movement of qi and seasonal flow and stuff like that. So, you know, sometimes you can see it balanced because it's the pre-heaven. And sometimes you can see movement in the body because it's post-heaven. Different people have different relationships for trigrams, organs, divisions. So that's a difficult area that would probably take quite a lot of time and some crazy drawings on pieces of paper.
Yes, it would, wouldn't it? Okay.
But I would definitely say that there are also relationships between on the Chinese clock on your Ziwu thing, which are beyond the ones that we've come up with, you know, with your Sa arm balancing across. And the other relationships have got to do with branches, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, we started this conversation talking about how there's all kinds of different ways of working with counterbalances in the body. And it's just a matter of which is the one that's most useful to use at this moment.
Absolutely. And remaining loyal to your window is useful as well, because also what I've found is that if you start off following one thing and then you think, oh no, and then, but this means this, and then I'm going to have to add in this and do that, and you're suddenly thinking about a different way of thinking, that doesn't work.
I have noticed that. And I've heard more than one acupuncturist, very experienced acupuncturist, say this. If you're going to use any particular system of acupuncture, use it. Use the system as the system is.
Yeah.
Don't try to like take two systems and, you know, break them up and stick them together. Because like you were just saying, it's like you need to be concurrent within the frame that
exactly.
You're within. And then it's super helpful to know, have I stepped outside my frame or am I still in my frame?
Yeah, you've got to be pretty brave and just stick to that frame. And sometimes that can be a bit scary because you think, oh no, I'm not doing enough. And what about this? And what about that? But you've just got to sort of jump in and do it.
Spot on.
Stick with it.
I totally agree. I know as a younger practitioner, I would be like, oh, a few needles here, like to cover my bases.
Yeah.
But that's because I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, that's right.
And I didn't know what I was doing, but more than that, I didn't trust what I was doing.
Exactly. That's why I said you have to be brave.
You do have to be brave. And one of the great things about having a frame and knowing your frame is you can hold that. And if you just do a treatment within that and you don't mess it up with anything else, you'll get very clear feedback. Were you right or were you wrong?
Yeah, you can trust what you're doing and do it. Don't use a lot of needles. Stay within that frame. Very, very effective, usually very strong.
Yeah, I would agree. It's not for the faint of heart.
No. But then, you know, being an acupuncturist is like a balancing act anyway, so what's new?
Well, I think life is kind of like a balancing act.
Yeah, but this is like a real tightrope, you know. You're kind of like, I don't really know what I'm doing. Bodies are really complicated. I'm doing my best here. Mm. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. I don't know. You know, it's, constantly. I actually think that's what makes it so fascinating and what keeps it alive. Because, you know, the moment you start thinking, my experience is the moment people seem to think that they know what they're doing, then they make a bit of a mess of it.
I have completely found in my clinical experience when I think like, oh, yeah, I got this down. I have to be super careful, super careful, because too many times it's really gone wrong.
Yeah,
after
that's
right. So, you know, this gets into a really tough thing because, you know, a lot of especially new practitioners that come out, they want to feel like they know what they're doing. They want to feel like, you know, they want to have a sense of comfort and confidence. And yet, I'm hearing you talk. I'm thinking about my own experience. I think often my best work comes when I can stand more comfortably in that place of not knowing, but I've got some things that I'm orienting to.
Yeah.
And as long as the things that I'm orienting to are not saying you're doing it wrong, I can probably follow it and be okay. But again, what is it that you're orienting to? So I'm curious for you when you're doing a treatment in clinic and you're working within a particular frame, is there anything that you pay attention to let you know, oops, I think I might have gone off base here because I'm using just a few needles. I'm using them in a powerful way. How do you know if you've got it or if you've missed it?
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that develops so slowly, isn't it? Like initially you can only do what you've been told because you don't know any different and you don't trust yourself. And I actually think that the lack of confidence is a really useful daily challenge. It's a crap place to be, but it's actually really, really helpful in the long run if you can sort of kind of live within that. That's quite useful. And well, mostly it's to do with looking, feeling, and just kind of really being as present as I can. That's all I can say. I don't know the answer, Michael. I really don't.
Yeah, I find for myself it's a constant ongoing inquiry.
Yeah.
I really
It's a
do.
challenge. It's a daily challenge.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't like to get bored.
That's good. And an acupuncture practice would be very helpful for you because you never know what's going to come in the door next.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it seems like, the universe provides you with what you need. So if you need to learn about something, then you get a whole load of people with that and you kind of learn a little bit more. And then you think, oh, I see. So we could try a bit of this or we could try that or, kind of think around it a lot, spend some time sort of learning more about it. And then when you're sort of a little bit more settled, okay, I think I can kind of understand what's going on there. Then, hey, you get a whole load of other people with completely different ideas, completely different problems.
Yeah, it's never a dull moment, that's for sure.
No.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe why specialization is not such a great idea as an acupuncturist.
Well, it might help you to help certain kinds of people.
Yeah.
And you can probably get really good at certain things, and certainly it can help you if you're in a crowded market. It can help
Yeah.
you in a business way. But I would also agree with you that if you go into a specialization, you might not develop some of these other things that we were just talking about because your perception in your mind is in a pretty narrow frame.
Yeah.
And so these wider frames wouldn't really, in their challenges, wouldn't really impinge on you in the same way.
Yeah, it's safer, but not as challenging. So I don't think you develop as much.
I think it depends. I mean, I know some people that do like dermatology and things like that, or
That's a really difficult area.
it's a super difficult area. I know some people that do women's health. I know women's health and fertility is a big thing these days, but I know a few practitioners who are just like super old school on it. And they also have, I mean, when I talk to them, they also have this very broad frame that they pull from in doing a very specific kind of work.
I think that's the thing. For me, I consider myself to be a general practitioner with areas of special interest rather than a specialist. Do you see what I mean?
I do. I do. Well, and being also easily bored, I find being a generalist is it's just more interesting. If I had to do the same thing every
Absolutely.
day, I'd have to, I don't know, do something else.
Exactly. And we don't want to do that, do we?
I'm pretty happy with what I'm doing.
Me too.
All right. Well, I thank you for your time today in this delightful discussion. I think I have more questions. I'm probably going to come back and ask you some more in the future, but I'm
Oh,
like
thanks,
fully
Michael.
sated at the moment. And
Okay.
thank you for helping me to understand the Joule clock a bit better. And the what did you call the two lines? Not trigram, diagram?
Duograms,
Duogram.
duograms. Yeah, it
Like a
makes total
duotone,
sense.
a
Duo
duogram.
too.
Okay.
Due.
Yeah.
Well,
And
thank you, Michael. It's been great, actually. I mean, I always feel like there's so much more to talk about.
well, there is. And we'll come back and do it again.
Excellent.